Alexa, open Brave Words Radio.
Welcome back to Brave Words Radio, brought to you by Vox Protocol, the global leader in voice app entertainment. Brave Words Radio is an awesome musical extension of bravewords.com, where we have been waving the flag of hard rock and heavy metal around the world for over 30 years. Since you have been here before, we hope you enjoy Brave Words Radio.
Please welcome to Brave Words Streaming for Vengeance, one of my heroes, Canadian guitar legend from Razor, Mr. Dave Carlo. And that's no word of a lie, dude. I've got the original EP, you know what I mean? I'm a huge, huge fan. So thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Now, I have to start off with the sad news, and very tragic because we were kind of with you along the way. So our deepest condolences to your recent loss. That was just the most heartbreaking thing to hear.
Thank you very much. It has been a horrendous couple of years. She was diagnosed with cancer. This is my beautiful wife, Rose, we're talking about. She was diagnosed with cancer in June of 2020. And, you know, wow, talk about the news you never want to hear. You know, I remember my wife coming upstairs to talk to me and telling me that they found cancer in her gallbladder, because they removed her gallbladder because she'd had some issues with pain there, some gallstones. So they went to remove her gallbladder and they found the cancer incidentally. And I remember that day, and that was an awful moment. You know, my family at that point had already been through my cancer, which was in 2012.
Right.
And, you know, we have two, they're young adults now, but they're still special needs people. My son being autistic, my daughter has borderline personality disorder. And if you don't know what that is, you go on the internet and read about it. It's an awful, awful set of circumstances to have to try and contend with. And, you know, just we've had a tough vibe in the family. And then this came along, and here's the woman who was the glue that held the whole thing together, a woman who did nothing but worry about taking care of everybody around her. And she did that until she couldn't do it any longer. And that was a devastating, crippling loss for my family. And, you know, for me to just try and act like it's nothing would be insincere. Okay. Like, honestly, she's an amazing woman, and there'll be a hole in my heart, and it will always be there. But, you know, I will never forget the lovely 25 years I had with her.
Where do you find the strength? Seriously. Wow.
Well, honestly, I think my kids have a lot to do with it. They need me. And I know that. I've become the only parent they have now. You know, knowing that, and my wife and I both deeply cared about our kids and their well-being, very devoted to our kids, both of us. You know, we were always on the same page as how we look after them and raise them and everything. So, you know, I made a commitment to my wife, as I did. I didn't need to make her the promise. It was going to happen anyway, that I would make sure we look after our kids to the best of my ability and get them on a decent path to trying to have an enjoyable life. Right. So that definitely empowers me, is knowing that I have to be there for my kids. And then, of course, things like my band and my music, they're very important to me too, especially since we have this new album that just came out. And it's a really important time for me to get out there and talk as much as I can and tell people about the new album and, you know, make the case for people picking up a copy and coming to see us live and buying some Razor merch.
Like the back patch.
The back patch, which, you know, I mean, I absolutely love this album cover. And I think it's very 80s thrash kind of vibe to it. And I love the artwork. The artwork was done by a very acclaimed, award-winning artist who is a partner of Ken Kelly, who is the guy who painted Kiss's Destroyer album cover. So, you know,
really?
I went to I went to the best people I could to do the artwork. So it's really laughable when you see the odd complete moron on the internet making comments about the artwork being Mickey Mouse or being cartoony or being unprofessional, because this is one of the most professional graphic artists on the planet. And these 16-year-old in my mother's basement geniuses are making those kind of flippant comments about that guy. So, yeah, I love the cover.
Now, it's really easy to say that it's taken Razor a quarter century or 25 years to follow up their last record. That's rather insulting, I'm sure, because of all your health issues and family issues and work issues. This record certainly does not sound dated. And you're right, it's rooted. Like a leopard can't change its spots, right? Razor, it is what it is. And Cycle of Contempt is one mean motherfucker of a record. And that's what we want from Razor.
That's what I'm delivering as Razor. I mean, I could have done something different. There was another guy who I actually had responded to directly on the internet. And by the way, before I make all these little criticisms of knuckleheads on the internet, I want to point out that 99% of the people who are on the internet are beautiful and fantastic supporters of the band and have lots of wonderful things to say. So let's make sure we're making that distinction. But of course, me and my OCD, I'll always zero in on the couple of people that annoy me. So what happens there is that, you know, I could have made a different record. One guy I was made a comment that the new album doesn't have enough diversity. And I just responded, I went, if you're looking for diversity on a Razor album, you are looking in the wrong place. You don't even know what our band's about if you're looking for diversity on a Razor album. Yes, we had one album that was experimental, Custom Killing. Right. Even the logo was different. Even the logo was different because we recognized it was a departure. So, you know, if I'm going to brand it with the Razor logo, the one that we all know and love, it's not going to be diverse. It's going to be relentless because that's what people want from Razor. Now, can I write other styles of music? Yes. Will I put them out as Razor? No. Will I put them out as something else? Maybe. Maybe someday. I don't know. We'll have to just see what time brings, right? But, you know, I do think about writing. It's going to be metal. I'm not going to start writing jazz standards. But it's going to be metal if I do that, but it would be something that would be distinct from Razor and it would be different. And the reason I was thinking about it was just, you know, my brain starts to wander. I start thinking, well, you know, Dave, you're getting up there a little bit. I can still give her. I still got the chops, but, you know, the day may come when that doesn't, you know, age is inevitable. None of us can avoid it. I have had two surgeries on each hand. And, you know, how much longer I can play at lightning pace for a whole show is, you know, it's up for, you know, not yet. And I don't have to make any decisions like that. But I thought, if I write a few songs that maybe aren't a million miles an hour, maybe that gives me a chance to continue performing as I get older, you know. But that's
right.
We're talking years down the line yet, right? So
where does the open hostility emotion come from?
You mean just being openly hostile, or you mean the emotions?
When it comes to writing music, you're openly hostile. So where does that come from, you think?
Yeah, well, I would like to say that all musicians have access to all of their emotions in a very extreme way. And so that doesn't just include metal musicians. We express our emotions, our negative and our high intensity emotions through our music. But, you know, there are, you know, jazz pianists and blues guitarists and all kinds of other artists, opera singers. They all have bad tempers and they all have anger issues. They all have stuff too, you know. So, you know, it isn't about the style of music that says anything about the personality of the people doing it. It's just a matter of when I create the Razor music, it's always music first. And I'm just trying to write what I think are good, solid, catchy, aggressive, fast, most of the time, but not necessarily, but that's just how they come out, songs. And lyrics come later. So when we talk about hostility in the lyrics, that is something that... I just, when I'm writing lyrics, which I did about half of the album, And Mike Campanello did three songs. I think Bob Reed, I think, did three. When I'm seeing the rain, I have a different slant than, say, Mike. Like, Mike writes songs about Armageddon and the end of the world and fire and all that kind of stuff. He's commenting like that. So he's not really, he doesn't really have hostility in his lyrics, so to speak, just aggression. Whereas me and Bob, to a lesser extent, tend to focus more on the human condition and talk about things that create animosity or anger or feelings of need for revenge or retribution, things like that. And, you know, that's kind of goes with the style of music, I think, you know. And also, I think it's interesting to talk about things like that. You know, I want interesting lyrics, lyrics that make people think, you know. And, you know, sometimes maybe all we're talking about in a song is violence sometimes. But for the most part, there's usually some kind of meaning there. There's some kind of story behind it that you know, there's more to it than just what the song title might tell you.
Now, as I said, 25 years.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. 25 years. But really, truly, how old is this material on this album?
This material is 4 years old. Because okay. I wrote it in 2018. Yeah.
Okay.
With the exception of two songs. One song was called All Fist Fighting. We tried performing it for people in 2015. I needed to make some changes to it. The chorus needed to be changed because people kept hearing office, like O-F-F-I-C-E, office fighting, which is not what we were trying to say. So we changed it to make it very clearly the song is All, A-L-L, All Fist Fighting, because it's a song Bob wrote the lyrics to, and it's about a barroom brawl that broke out. It's based on some real events that he actually saw. So something he was part of, because Bob's always at the boozer, probably. I mean, you know, he likes it. He enjoys a good drink, as we all know. So that one and another song called Punch Your Face In, which I wrote about 10 years ago and was almost wrote it as a joke because I thought to myself, well, let's take this to the most extreme thing without getting into the gunfire. Let's just say, okay, so let's write a song called, so we did it as almost as a joke. And I really actually wasn't going to put it on this new album. I was thinking, okay, I'm going to rework those words. But the guys in the band, and specifically Mike, pleaded it with me to keep it. Mike Campanella. No, we've got to do a song called Punch Your Face In. And then Mike's brother, who also liked the song, just kept telling him, oh, we like, no, that's hilarious. That's great. I said, okay, fine. We'll put Punch Your Face In on the record. You know, so we did. So it's on the record. I was going to put that music would have appeared, but I might've done something different with the lyrics. Not much different. Just, I would have gotten the Punch Your Face In part out, but yeah, I think most people like it. So
we have, most people would say this world is just gone to shit. It's very angry, but music like Razor produces is kind of therapeutic. It kind of takes you away from the crap outside. What do you feel?
Well, I think it's therapeutic for sure. I mean, definitely it helps people cope with negative emotions. I've heard that constantly over the course of our career playing. People coming up to me at shows and thanking me for this song or that song and telling me that it had a big meaning to them in terms of getting them through a tough time emotionally, a tough time where they were experiencing some difficulties in their life and they found some comfort in some of the things I was expressing in my songs. And just the camaraderie of knowing that other people go through these same things, you know, I feel very gratified when people do that. So yeah, there's definitely a therapeutic aspect, and also just the aggression of the music itself. Like, some people don't even have English as a first language, maybe don't even understand the lyrics, and they still love the band because they can feel that emotion and that aggression in the music, and it helps them blow off some steam, which is what it's all about, right? Give people a place to blow off some steam and not have to take it out in terms of real world aggression, right? Because we need less real world violence, and we need more. Maybe we need more entertainment. I don't need more of it. There's plenty of it out there. But musically speaking, Razor fills a very unique space.
Now, metal fans love their hard copies, and I was very happy to purchase the picture disc, the regular LP, lovely back patch, the cassette. What do you think about the fact that the music industry, maybe not relying on vinyl sales, but vinyl has made a resurgence and cassettes, and I even have the cassette box. Like, this to me is insane. Like, wow.
That the 35-year one?
Yes.
Is that that one came out of Greece? Yes. Well, that one would have been more widely available, but, you know, we only had certain territorial rights for certain recordings. So that's the way it had to be, and that was the format it had to come out on. But it's pretty cool to get all our stuff in one place. But I will say that I think it's a good thing for the record companies that vinyl has had a rebirth, I guess, to speak. You know, we need the record companies still. I mean, you don't necessarily have to use them. Some musicians are quite successful in not using them. A band like Razor, you know, I count on the support of some people around me to help get the word out. And Relapse Records has done a wonderful job of helping me to do that. And I'm trying to reach new people, right? Not just the audience that we've always had, trying to get it out to new people. There's room to grow the band. And having a record company like Relapse has been a big help for us. And again, you know, some bands I talk to, they're like, well, you know, I don't want to go to a record company because they want part of my digital rights and they want this and they want that. And I'm like, okay, so be careful what you negotiate, but also remember, there's an old saying, you can have part of something or you can have all of nothing. And I would rather have a much bigger fan base and share any profits that we are generating than have it all for myself and have a fan base that's a tenth of the size. So, there's other ways to earn income in music these days. The model's changed. It's not really about record sales for the artist anymore. It's about performance fees and like for playing and for and selling merchandise. That's how the model is now. Whereas back in the 80s, 70s, it was about album sales and getting tour support from your record company and hitting the road and just trying to do everything to drive those numbers up. So things have changed. And I love when people buy the physical copy of the record because the band gets the best return when you do that. So if you want to help the band the most, and believe me, we are not in a position where all of us are making a full-time living off of Razor. We are just not. And the more that we are able to move in that direction a little bit, the more likely it is you'll get a chance to see us. Because if I can get the band in a position where we're getting compensated enough that we can be out there all the time, then you'll see more of us. You'll see more of the live performances. But I really appreciate when people support the band by buying physical copies in an era when it's so easy just to stream everything.
I've loved watching the whole Relapse rollout with you. I've worked with Relapse for like 30 years almost with the magazine and everything. And their store is great to navigate. And the goods, at the end of the day, this product looks, I hate calling it product, but you know what I mean? It looks amazing. It looks fucking amazing, right?
You know what? They're all metalheads. And that's when it, you know, I mean, it's full of the place. It's a record company run by and employed with metalheads. So they have a passion for what they're doing. It's not just about, shipping as many as they can. And, you know, obviously they need to do that to be able to keep going. It's important to have sales. I mean, that's just the way it is. There's nothing to be ashamed of to be trying to push sales and trying to get them, as long as you believe in what you're doing. And you're it's coming from the right place, which in Razor's case, it always is. I mean, I don't think anybody could ever accuse us of trying to, just be a commercial, we're not playing the right kind of music if that's all we wanted to do, right? You know, if we were doing something beyond just putting out ear candy, I mean, we would be playing, there are many other styles we could select if we wanted to have, the kind of a success, pick your whoever, whoever your huge artist is, right? But we play from the heart. Everything is based on what we want to do musically without any thoughts of whether it's going to be a commercial success or not.
Can we look back? Where did the need for speed come from? Why did it need to be so fast?
You know what? It's the evolution of where metal was going as it came up through the 70s. Bands came and pushed the envelope, right? And not the way we do it. But, you know, we're a product of what happened there. And if you think about it, this is just off the top of my head, so I may not be completely accurate, but I think about bands that started to play faster. It started with, like, Black Sabbath started having songs in the early days of songs that had faster parts, like Into the Void, and songs like Stuff on Volume 4, like...
Supernaut.
Yeah, Supernaut, and what's the last song? Under the Sun. Under the Sun has a wonderful song. But anyway, Sabbath did that a fair bit. Lots of stuff on Paranoid like that, too. And then, you know, Priest started pushing things when they put out Stained Glass and Sin After Sin, especially when you started seeing songs like, you know, Exciter off of Stained Glass and Rapid Fire off of Steeler. And then, you know, Motorhead, you know, happened. And Motorhead, I mean, even the name Motorhead means speed freak, right? Motorhead, right? And so there's kind of a dual meaning there for Motorhead. And then when they put Ace of Spades out, you know, it just kind of moved that direction. Then look at Metallica and Slayer did. And Razor was born out of bands like Motorhead, Raven, and Slayer.
I think a lot of people get confused with timing because everyone kind of puts the spotlight, obviously because they're American, on the Big Four, but there was stuff coming out of Canada, like Exciter, Razor, and Anvil. They were in the mix at the same time. I know it wasn't called the Big Four in the early 80s, but were you paying attention to what was going on in the States? Did you kind of feel like a camaraderie with Anvil and Exciter, that there was Canada had its own extreme scene?
Well, we were all cutting edge metal fans. And what I mean by that is we were the kind of guys that would be at the record store looking at imports and learning about what the newest, heaviest bands were out there, just trying to find something that was good and heavy. And speed itself wasn't always the first thing in our mind. But I would say that we never really looked at it from any Canadian standpoint. I mean, there might have been some pride that there were some Canadian bands doing it. But honestly, the first real metal band from Canada would probably have to be Anvil, because I wouldn't put Triumph and Rush into that category. And so I'd say Anvil was the first Canadian band that was just playing metal, as to speak. So, yeah, there was some pride that when Anvil came out. And, you know, those first couple of Anvil albums, I love those albums. And I also love Heavy Metal Maniac from Exciter, which came out just shortly before Razor, you know, put out Armored Dangerous. But, I would say that we just liked all metal from all parts of the world. And a lot of it came from the U.S. But, I wouldn't say any particular. My three influences that always come to my mind when I was putting Razor's material together in the early days would be Motorhead, Raven, and Slayer played a big role towards as we got to around 1985, because we had done a bunch of shows with them and they rubbed off on us.
What do you think the heaviest riff is of all time? On a Razor record and somebody else?
Well, that's a tough question. I mean, like, if you think about it now, how many albums have we done? I mean, Razor's done about 9 or 10 albums, and I will leave that for other people to decide now, but I can give you my favorite, or at least right, at least for the moment. And then if we change the subject or go talk about another song, it might change. I would say that the heaviest song I've ever listened to, from my standpoint, nothing's ever struck me as heavier than Haunting the Chapel from the EP, the song Haunting the Chapel.
Wow. Yeah,
because of one that, now it's also, you know, some other guy listening and go, I don't understand what he's talking about. Well, you know what, dude? You weren't there at the time, okay? I picked this EP up at a time when nothing sounded like this. It was incredibly heavy. And I mean, the only thing even close would have been Kill 'Em All Metallica or Show No Mercy, their first Slayer album. And if you listen to Show No Mercy, the first Slayer album, and then you listen to Haunting the Chapel, the EP that came out after it, you realize they made a gigantic leap into a more evil, heavy, awesome place. They just took it to an awesome place. That's probably the Slayer song that sucker punched me the best, is Haunting the Chapel.
When I wrote that question down, I'm like, maybe I should try to answer that. And the first song that popped into my head was Postmortem. But I would agree, when the Haunting the Chapel EP came out and you heard Chemical Warfare, every track on that, three of them, right? Just, yep. It just changed the whole landscape right there. That was the one thing.
Did for me, for sure. I mean, and I was listening to all kinds of metal all the time with my friends. And to me, that was a holy shit moment, right? When we got that EP. I was like, wow, these guys are fantastic. I used to think they were great, but now they are just like, this is the heaviest band in the world. That's what I remember thinking. And I didn't change my mind about that.
Now, I showed you the EP, and I literally was a kid growing up in Barrie, and I found it at Sam the Record Man. So what kind of distribution did you guys have? And was it true? You go to Wikipedia, was it 2,000 copies that you guys pressed of the first EP? Give us some clarity.
1,200. And what we did was, the idea behind it was, and I don't care for people who don't really understand what we're doing, trying to evaluate it on some kind of, emotional level. And that also went for not just critics, but that goes for the Canadian music establishment, which would be agents, managers, record companies, radio stations, what have you, back in the day we're talking. The decision was made that rather than make a demo tape that we love and believe in and shop it around to a whole bunch of people and have them go like this, because 3/4 of them were like this before you even said, allow me to introduce myself. Okay. They're already like this. So like, I didn't need that. I wasn't interested in that. That might have helped me work a little harder, but with anger, because sometimes anger is a great motivator. But I just felt like I don't want to do that. I want to put something out, bring it right to the people, and let's see if they like it or not. Never mind what these record companies are going to tell us. So we financed this ourselves, which was, now looking back, not easy for a bunch of guys who were only 19, 20 years old. And we didn't borrow any money from any parents or anything. We did it ourselves. And it wasn't a demo tape like some other geniuses like to say online and stuff. It was a professional, quality, expensive recording for the time in a professional studio. And it was an EP. And the reason it was an EP was because we couldn't afford to go much better than that in terms of recording time, because we didn't have the money. And the second reason was also we thought, well, this will give people an easy reason to check us out, because it won't cost that much when we put it out. So, we did that, took it to the people directly. And what we did was we just made arrangements through the studio to have the record pressed. They kind of acted as a little bit of an agent for us and set up the pressing and all that. And then we literally had, 1,200 records. So 24 boxes of 50 albums, I guess. And we took them around. We just got in our car and went around Southern Ontario and dropped them off at big record stores, ones that looked big. We went to Toronto, went to London, Ontario, Kitchener-Waterloo, Hamilton, and that was about it, I think. And we just went to the local record store and we said, we have this EP. We'd like you, if you're interested, we'll give you a free copy so you can play it in your store. And then would you put this on your rack, leave it on there for a few weeks. You don't have to pay us anything. And if you sell some, then, you can pay us once you sell them. And if you like it, we'll bring you some more. And if it's not selling at all and you don't want it, then we'll take it back. And everybody we did it with said, okay, they were all up for it. So we did that. And nobody sent them back. Everybody wanted more. So we knew that going right to the people was a good decision, because people were buying it, liking it. All of a sudden we started to get fan mail. And then all of a sudden I get phone calls from a couple of the record stores. Their distributors actually want to talk to me because they are noticing that it's going out the door. And we never heard of you guys. We just put it on the rack and it's going out the door. So we want to buy some more. And then we started hearing, I've got a customer in, the Netherlands. I've got a customer in Germany. So we got rid of them pretty quickly. So, there's a small amount of them left, but that we kept, but not many now. We're getting down to the last few.
There was a big Swedish tour that came through just before COVID hit. It was Amon Amarth, At the Gates, Arch Enemy, and Grand Magus. So pretty awesome bill. And I wore my Evil Invaders t-shirt to the show, and every band said, holy shit, man, that's a really cool t-shirt. So nice. You have, you know what I mean? There is a huge, huge fan base. And these are kind of older bands, but still, you made, I don't know, you made an impression, to say the least.
That's good. I'm glad to hear it. Now, I wish some of these bands with half a million followers would put a tweet or a post up to tell people they like it so that we could get some new fans, because, you know, that would be nice. That would be nice. I would do that if I was in their position, and I hope some of them do someday. You know, I always think about, you know, I can never get this out of my head that, you know, Steve Harris from Iron Maiden, he was a huge fan of Raven. He was a huge fan of Raven. I remember interviews he did in the early 80s talking about this band Raven that he loved. And it's like, all right, Iron Maiden has kind of had a little bit of success over the year. They should have thrown a bone to Raven. He should have done something for him. This way I think, okay? To my way of thinking, I know everybody just go, oh, fuck that. It's every man for himself. I don't know. If you're enjoying huge success and you see guys struggling like Anvil did in the Anvil movie, or Raven was doing, couldn't do anything. You couldn't mention them a couple of times. You couldn't find a place to give them a guest slot on a gig or two, give them a chance. I mean, you know they're a brilliant band. You know that. Why don't you help them out? Like, I think Raven's better than Iron Maiden. I mean, I know Raven to me is a great band and totally underappreciated. People never understood their place in metal, when they came out, what they did, how they pushed the envelope. You know, Atlantic Records destroyed their careers by forcing them to make two terrible albums, which they may not admit that themselves, but I love those guys, and I'm just being honest. They had those two albums they did for Atlantic Records. Pack Is Back, which is just like, please take that album cover and flush it down the toilet. And then the other one was Stay Hard, which they unfortunately did not, because they were being pressured by a record company to be something they're not. And anyway, going back to my original premise, I wish Steve Harris had done something for Raven, you know. Not that it was his job. Okay, we all know it wasn't his job. But just, you're enjoying massive success and you're in your jet flying around the world having a great time. Think about some of the guys that maybe you love that you could do something for. You know, I don't know. That's kind of how I think. Maybe a little bit of philanthropy or whatever. But I start to think, you know, the more success you have, you kind of maybe should use that to do some good for some other people.
Well, there is a band that's actually throwing Raven a bone. Tragically, we lost John and Marshall Zazula, and there's a big tribute show going on in Florida in about a month with Metallica headlining, and Raven are opening. And if you recall, Metallica opened up for Raven back in the day, because Raven was going to be the big band, right? Metallica were the little openers.
I was there at the time, and I remember that. That's why I talk about Raven and think that they deserve a better fate, you know. Fantastic. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, yeah. A couple more for you, Dave. Left field question. I was looking at the British Steel logo with the razor, and I was looking at the razor logo. Is there any tie in there with the two razors?
Yeah, I would say not, because unless we talk to the guy who designed our logo, maybe for him. Because I didn't design the logo, but I certainly, like, British Steel came out 4 years before Armored Dangerous. So
that's why I asked.
There's a razor blade there, which is cool, but it didn't make any difference to us. Like, the name Razor came out of a discussion we had where we just kept throwing names up on the board there. You know, we had a chalkboard or a whiteboard or something, I forget, and we just threw up like 70 plus names. And we just started eliminating them till we came down to one or two, and then Razor was the one that's left. That's the band name. That's how we did it.
Did you know Gord Kirkin very well?
Yes, I did. I knew him very well. He was a very close friend, and I'm devastated that he died. And he died I think the day before our record came out. Our album was released. You know, it's like poor Gord. You know, I mean, just. Awful thing. I mean, and he was a year younger than my wife too. So I always thought that what would kill Gord would be probably a heart attack, just because he was having a bit of a problem controlling his weight, and he died from cancer. So you know, it's it might have been complications. I don't know all that detail, but right. I just know that there's another guy who I wish had more appreciation. I'm glad he got a chance to experience some appreciation for what he did in the last 10 years, getting out and getting a chance to play and seeing that you know, some people did care about what he was doing and what he had done. He had an amazing singing voice. I mean, just excellent, excellent vocalist.
And just the vibe, an amazing spirit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's a fun guy, and he had a great Canadian sense of humor. And let me give you a little anecdote here, because this will make. I was going to save this for my YouTube channel, but I'll give it to you. Gord and I were going to do something musically together when I retired Razor in 1992, because that's another story, right? Razor was not going for 40 years. There was a 10-year thing where I was doing nothing. But anyway, I've spoken to that in other interviews. But Gord. And I were thinking about doing something musically. I was thinking that I might want to do something else. Wasn't sure yet, but I eventually did decide not to continue. So I pulled out of the project. But Gord and I, for about a year, around 1993, were going back and forth with demos, trying to create some new music that we thought we would do together. He called me on the phone one day and he said, "I've got this." That's my impression of Gord. "I got this brilliant idea. Brilliant. Let me tell it to you. I'm so impressed with myself." "Yeah, what's up, Gord?" He goes, "What do you think of this?" Now, you're probably going to have to be Canadian to understand this joke, but I'm going to tell it anyway. He goes, "I just came up with a brilliant new song. 2/4 and a 2x4. "What? 2/4 and a 2x4. Here's the chorus. Give me a 2/4 and a 2x4, and I will make things right." Okay, so anybody who doesn't know what a 2/4 is, it's a case of 24 beers, and a 2x4 is a piece of wood. So he's basically saying, "Get me loaded and give me a piece of wood to hit people with, and I'll straighten everybody out." And he thought that was brilliant. By the way, I thought it was brilliant too.
That's a great way to end this thing. Well, one last question. I'm back on the road. When is that going to happen?
Right now, we haven't announced anything yet because I put everything on hold this last year because I had to look after Rose. So I just told the agents just this past week that we can start booking shows again, start lining stuff up. So I do have two shows in November, going to England for one show, and then we're going to Sweden the very next day for the Abyss Festival. And then I have nothing, not until March. I think March is when we're going to Hell's Heroes in Houston. And there's a whole bunch of other stuff being worked on and discussed right now, but got to get details sorted out. I'm not sure where we're going to spend a lot of 2023 yet, whether it's going to be Europe or it's going to be North America, or it might be a combination of the two. I've got to talk to the agents and get it sorted out, but they're working on it right now as we speak.
Dude, as a fan since day one, I am just so fucking happy for you guys, and you in particular.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it. I appreciate all the support. It's really important to me, obviously, for a whole bunch of reasons. I've been going through a lot of difficult personal stuff. As have my whole family and friends. It's really important that I get, this is my opportunity. I'm 58 years old. I've still got some chops left in these hands. So we got to get out there and try and pick up as many new fans as we can over the next year. And I'm going to bust my balls trying to do that. And then we'll see where we are at the end of 2023. And then decisions will be made. What happens next? I don't know what that will be, whether it will be, maybe I'll do another Razor album. We'll see. I have to admit, some of those awful reviews left an awful taste in my mouth. So, but having said that, most of them were very good. But those shitty reviews did not make me feel very motivated to do it again, I have to admit. I mean, I'm just being honest. So we'll wait and see. I'll take the temperature of the world in the next year. But if I feel like there's just it's a polarized response and that it wasn't successful enough, then I don't know. I'll have to see. But right now, my instincts tell me that I'm focusing on a very small number of people and letting them have way too much influence over how I feel about things. But you know what pisses me off is that when you type in Cycle of Contempt review, you get right away. Instead of giving you a choice of reviews to look at, it gives you that bonehead angry metal guy's comments right at the top of the screen. Google has done me the favor of having this guy who completely misunderstood the record and the whole project and, you know, pontificating about stuff he knows nothing about. And he's the guy who has the first say on whether or not it's a good album or not. And I say this to people, if you like Slayer, you'll probably like Razor. If all you care about, by the way, I think the album production is beautiful. Okay, I love the production on this album. And when you get, I know it's supposed to be a last question, it's supposed to be a quick answer, but I'm going to just say this because I want to make this point. To people who are reviewing records, if all you're talking about is production, you're a knucklehead for a whole bunch of reasons. The main reason is that everybody's got different equipment. Everybody's listening to this stuff on different equipment. And we all know, unless we think every stereo advertisement that we've heard over the last 100 years is bullshit, we all know that different stereo equipment produces different sounds. And if you have an EQ, a good mix should be manipulated. You can manipulate it to get what you want. And for to sit there and do reviews and to talk only about production makes you an idiot. You should be evaluating songwriting. You know, you should be evaluating creativity. You should be evaluating, and also you should be evaluating if